Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. I am Leona Abraham Brando, host for Blog Talk Radio, Shedding Light. Joining us today, as many of you know, every Tuesday at 5:30 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, we have been interviewing Andy Williams, Jr., who is running for the presidential campaign, not under Democrats, not under Republicans, but for We the People. Andy will be speaking on issues pertaining to broken political systems that stand in the way of solutions, politicians who stopped serving the people years ago. And Andy is a rabbi, a modern-day abolitionist, an advocate for the people. Born in Illinois, Andy dropped out of high school, eventually took up residence at Illinois DLC, and ultimately was determined to improve himself. He attended college, obtained his degree, and has helped people across the nation with legal issues. On July 3rd of 2023, Andy announced his campaign to run for the presidency of the United States of America and is running on We the People party ticket with the message of unity, representing the rights of all people, and restoring America. His platform is to abolish all forms of slavery in the form of unfair taxation, mass incarceration, and to prevent government from infringing upon the rights of we the people. So all are welcome to join us as we interview Andy Williams, Jr., and you can find Andy Williams, Jr. on the internet at www.hoodcandidate.com and www.andywilliamsjr.com. So I welcome everyone to call in, to listen in, ask questions, provide feedback, or whatever you'd like to do. And Andy, I want to thank you so, so much for being agreeable to coming on the show once again, and I thank you so much for this honor.
Thank you, Miss Leona. I feel like this should be my Tuesday campaign stop.
Well, it's certainly welcome. It really is welcome. And I am so glad, I'm so happy, and so pleased to know that somebody is taking the initiative to step up and take the plate and start running for this presidential campaign. Because the ones that we have been hearing about are total disasters. They're losers. They haven't done anything really for this country except make it more chaotic. So can you please, Andy, once again, introduce yourself to the audience and tell them whatever I didn't mention, if you can please tell them about yourself.
Andy Williams, Jr., 2024 presidential applicant or candidate, as I see everybody knows. I ran for president in the 2020 campaign with the Libertarian Party. And after that election, you know, the 2020 election was over, I've been boots on the ground, taking care of business, advocating for the people's rights. I've engaged in some litigation across the states from Texas. I sued the Bell County Juvenile Detention Center for the inhumane treatment they were doing with juveniles. I filed a claim against the United States and 30 other states under the 13th Amendment and infringing upon the people's rights for the ongoing role of slavery, the 30 states in the United States. And just been learning about representing the people. That's what it is. And our generation, which I just turned 51, 10-10 last week, our generation cannot wait for another election. We have to do the work now, because you don't have to be voted to love your neighbor. You just don't have to. And our government, well, this form of government has strayed away from a constitutional republic government where the people were sovereign, where the people had the right to self-govern. And what we're operating in today is we the people are really slaves to the system, to this corporate form of government. And our agenda, our vision, our mission is to take us back to what I like to say, the Garden of Eden. And if you don't see the vision, I'm trying to paint it for you, because a lot of times when we're sharing the message, it's inspiring, it's hopeful, but some people just can't see that happening. And I believe it can happen because I'm living that. Like I've went down this journey of trying to discover, you know, who I am myself. And I realized that the biggest war that I was having was inside of me. Like I was warring against myself. And once you defeat that enemy within, then you see the suffering of so many people that's looking for a shepherd, but they are scattered abroad, scattered in the wilderness. And there's nobody there to lead and guide them. And when I say lead and guide, I'm not saying oppress them. I'm not trying to be the people's parents. I'm saying we the people have the power, and it's left up to us as our duty to exercise that power. The role of government is real simple: correct, direct, and provide resources, which is protection. And they're supposed to protect the people's rights and our property. And then they're supposed to give direction. Where the resources at? What is, you know, make sure no needs are going unmet. Make sure stuff is being distributed fairly and equally. And then there's a time for correction. So whenever we the people do something that needs to be corrected from a guiding standpoint, that would be the role of government. But what we have today is a tyrannical government. They're the people's parents, and they're running these states like plantations, and we the people are their slaves. So we're here to abolish that. I'm being honest. Like, we're here just to abolish this current tyrannical form of government without running around talking about we're going to drain the swamps. We're going to enlighten the people about their rights. That's what we're going to do. So that's about Andy.
And you know something, it's just what's needed. Modern day activism in the form of the presidential campaign. And it's being an activist for the right reasons. You know, we have a thing in this United States right now that we are all being suppressed. And a lot of people don't realize it because it's being done in such a discreet way. You know, I posted on social media the fact that you're going to be on the show. And I actually just posted it on the newsfeed. And it disappeared right after I did it. But we are in this country, the citizens of this country, they don't realize it, but we are being monitored. Our televisions, our computers, everything. And that's why a lot of the people, family members of those out in the communities and also advocates are saying, we need to do something about this because nothing is being done, and everything that they want to post on Facebook or any other social media to talk about the issues that they want to see addressed are not being allowed to be posted. I don't know what your thoughts are on that.
Well, this is something that is a spiritual movement, and can't nobody stop it. I like to say, ain't no devil in hell that's going to be able to stop what's going on right now. So whatever tricks they do, whatever tricks that they play, it's all good, because they're not going to be able to stop it. This is such a strong spiritual movement, which I thank you for connecting me and Kimberly the other day. And those little connections, those heroes, those other champions, the lady in California, Angie, how I got connected with you, Miss Leona, and just how this territory has been enlarged, these doors have been opened that no man can shut. This movement ain't going to be stopped. It's not. That's why we have the Freedom Campaign, because this is about freedom every day, all day.
And the good thing is, as they say, we're getting people now that are interested and involved, like yourself, running for the presidential campaign. But we also have, you know, we have a lot of other people, and they're out there trying to do, and actually, Kimberly Mukatarian is on with us as well, and she is the founder of Save Our Sons, but she is very active as well. And getting people together like this, and I'm going to allow her to introduce herself as soon as I finish the statement, we cannot change America, and we cannot make things better unless we all come together in unity, and we are not afraid to stand up and stand out. And this is what's happening right now in our country. We have so many people that complain about the problems of this country, and yet they don't speak out. They talk amongst themselves. They do the things behind the scenes. But they don't speak out. They don't even come on to talk about the issues at hand. And right now they have an opportunity because you're doing these shows every Tuesday to be able to answer their questions, to be able to give them insight into how you plan to run this whole race. So I encourage you, the audience, to call in. And even if you're listening in, even call in and make a statement, ask a question. And now I'm going to also introduce Kimberly Mkhitaryan, again, who is an activist, and she has her organization. And Kimberly, if you will, please introduce yourself and talk about what you do and how you and Andy and others can work together to try to improve the country. Okay, can you hear us, Kimberly? I think we're having the same problem we had when you first came on, Andy, the sound. Kimberly, if you can hear me, if you can go out and then come back in again. Unless she's on mute, too. Let me see if she's on mute. Okay, Kimberly Mkhitaryan, can you hear me? I'm hearing a lot of static in the background with you, Andy. Kimberly will have to, I'm gonna have her drop and then come back on again. But again, as we say, we even see a lot of this division going on between their own parties, the Democrats and the Republicans. And this is chaos. We have all these people, our own government, going over to Ukraine and going over to Israel when this country's falling apart. And then we have them fighting amongst each other so that they can't come to a mutual agreement to do something positive in their own country with its citizens.
Right. It's always the focus is always broken off of taking care of home first. And with all the promises of America being so great and so this, I'm gonna be honest with you, with the way, if things were to stay the way they were going right now, I'd feel sorry for the foreigners a year now from now after they done come here and got tricked and deceived. Because that's what America does. The current system is a very deceptive system. It's what we say in the scriptures, the thief come to kill, steal, and destroy. So you always bait them with something that looks good. Oh, here's this promise. We're going to bail you out. And the next thing you know, you done become prisoners of war, slaves to this system, just like we are. And so my reality is I truly feel sorry for these people because we feel sorry for our own. We're not getting the stuff we need. Look at right around the corner from Washington, D.C., when Reagan was in and they showed the houselessness there. It's still that same way. Any city we want to go to, I don't want to say any because I haven't been to all of them. L.A., when I was in California, I seen the people sleeping on the streets, the tent city there. There's one here in Chicago, my sister Inglewood Barbie, the Club 51 with the friends. That's houseless situation. And Brandon Johnson, when he was running for mayor, he went and talked to her. I think he came back two times. But then they passed this funding for the foreigners and give them some aid, which I'm not saying that's not a positive thing. But if here you were talking to Inglewood Barbie first, which is really a doctor, very educated, sleeping out there with the people, and then you bypassed, you know, her vision to go help, you know, people who were not here, that's wrong. That's wrong.
Exactly. Exactly. I at one time I was proud of this country. I was proud to be an American. But I'll tell you right now, it's gotten to the point now where not only myself, but I'm sure there's others out there that are so disappointed and frustrated and angry as well at the lack of attention, the lack of consideration of our government on its own people. And then you have Governor DeSantis and you have Governor Abbott luring people from other countries in Central America to the United States, luring them, promising them jobs just because they want to prove a point to the Democrats. This is what it's all about. And who's paying the price? The ones that are paying the price are the immigrants that are being lured over here and the children that are in camps who have lost their parents, because when they separated these children from their parents, when Trump was in office, what happened? They lost track of who the children belonged to. They lost track of the parents. And I often wonder if the parents were even deported or if they were killed at the border.
Right.
Because I'm sure if my child was out there, I would be hitting the media. I would be calling. I would be doing everything to get attention to find out where my child or children were. But you don't hear from a lot of them. And these children, I understand, are being molested, are being raped. You know, this is our government doing this to the immigrants, the children. And look what's
right.
happening with a 12-year-old child because of Israel and Palestine. This 12-year-old child was stabbed to death by the landlord, and his mother was also stabbed, and she's in the hospital in critical condition while that 12-year-old child is deceased.
Hmm.
And this is somebody in our own country. This is why we have some sick people in this country. And when the United States of America gets involved with a lot of this stuff that they don't need to get involved with, they're putting their own people at risk, their own innocent children, men and women in this country. Now, I want to ask what your thoughts are on it. If all of this was going on, how would you handle these overseas wars that are going on right now? Would you participate or would you not?
We could not participate currently right now because we have our own domestic wars. Just seeing that a brother that was locked up for 16 years was shot and killed in Georgia. That's domestic terrorism. That's an undeclared war on the people in the streets right here in what we've learned to know as America. So while I'm focusing on what's happening in another country, you have to realize in these places that they've declared the United States of America, we have there's militarized police departments coming in, breaking in people's doors, tanks going on the streets. How could we honestly really deal with somebody else's backyard when ours is still filthy in its own?
And that's what I say all the time. How can we tell other people how to live and how to operate and how to unite and get along when we ourselves can't? And I'll tell you, our leaders are not going over there to try to negotiate or try to talk them into negotiating. They're going over there to offer support to continue the war, you know, to increase it, to send troops over, to bring weapons over, to send more money over.
Mm-hmm.
But again, I don't know. So if you can, talk a little bit more about your campaign and what's going on now and just update us a little on it.
Our campaign is truly just it's really focused on freedom. And in order to obtain that freedom, we have to abolish slavery in all forms. And currently the main three forms of slavery in these states of America is taxes. When we think about taxes, you think about here we the people, we go to work, and then the government takes what they want out of our checks. That means we're working for the government. So that means we're slave to the system. We work for the government like we're the government's employees. Well, that's incorrect because we the people created government. And if we said, well, how do we fix our roads and our other thing? Very easy. Corporations that engage in business from, they tax them. Because if we think as a people, how many times we get taxed? Taxed in your check, tax at the grocery store, tax when you buy a car, tax when you park a car, tax when you get gas. It's just tax on top of tax on top of tax on top of tax. So we really not making no money when you really think about it. And so when we remove that taxation as theft, as my brother Dan Burham said, who is a libertarian, I know he ran for president in the last couple of elections, we have to rid this tax on we the people. That's the same reason why the Europeans escaped under the king's rule with the Great Britain or whatever that was a stamp tax act. They was getting taxed, but then their rights were not being, their rights were being violated. So it's like no taxation without representation. Our campaign is focused on reducing that tax because it's the right of the people to not pay a tax. That's number one. the prison industrial complex, this legalized slavery, where after the 13th Amendment was passed, you come out with these slave codes, black codes, Jim Crow, 1994 crime bill, habitual offender, Controlled Substance Act, all of these acts, that's all legalized slavery because somebody's voted on it to infringe and take upon your rights. The third thing of slavery we're trying to, one second. Excuse me. I got to close the door. One second. Okay, sorry about that. Is the form of human trafficking. Human trafficking is another form of slavery. And it's going on right now, as we see with the foreigners, the people that we've identified as immigrants. We're snatching their kids up, and they're being trafficked. We've heard about the story with Jeffrey Epstein. I haven't looked into it, but I know it's a lot deeper than what the surface shows, and that is such a form of perversion that if we're not looking out for our children, in Ohio, a lot of these people of color kids are coming up missing. Their organs, melon, you know, it's just gone I don't want to say it's gone unspoken about because I'm not in Ohio. I just see what I'm seeing in the news and the public that these kids are just coming up by the hundreds. Not a national cry. That's not something that's going on. We the people have to rise up and come up with the solutions. And so those are the three main things with our campaign. But We Are the People Party has another movement that we're looking to recruit 300 people to run for Congress with our party under the same platform. And we're doing background checks. The reason why we're doing background checks, because we want to know your body of works. We want to know what experience you have. Don't come in here advocating for criminal justice reform when we're trying to abolish the system. We don't want to reform, but we want somebody that has experience with that. If you face trauma, then you understand what healing looks like. If you, like the organization NAMI, National Association of Mental Health or Mental...
National Alliance for the Mentally Ill.
Okay, thank you. I didn't know what the acronym fully stood for, but what they do is they take life experience people and hire them. So then they can relate, they can empathize with the people that they're serving, helping. That's that life experience. That's what we need to be doing in Congress, is bringing people with life experience. Because if you have an individual that's been in Congress 40, 50 years, 20 years, and they're saying the same thing about reducing taxes every time they come around a campaign, well, we ain't falling for the old banana in the tailpipe trick this time. No. We need somebody with experience, and that's where our We Are the People Party comes in, because we're of the mindset that when we start recruiting on a heavy basis, we will recall you if you get elected and don't keep your oath. We will. We're not going to put the burden onto the people, because what we need to bring is morality, integrity, and values, statesmanship, back into this role of government. And more importantly, just in this role of life, it's just been removed. It's like it's been stripped when it comes to the back in the days when they would show the Leave It to Beaver. That was family shows. Now you can watch TV on and all you're seeing is somebody's beaver. It's ridiculous. Well, we the people have allowed that, and we the people have to change that.
Exactly. But I'm going to say I often have doubts about we the people, because we the people don't seem to be as motivated in this country as other countries. And I interview people from other countries all the time that talk about it. You know, they talk about the differences between their countries and this country, and they talk about the issues in this country. They talk about the racism, They talk about the corruption. They talk about the greed. They talk about the mass incarceration. They talk about all of these issues that go on in this country. And yet, this country does nothing to try to improve or try to catch up to the way the other countries are operating. They do nothing. It's almost like they're people in power without education.
And that's exactly what it is.
Exactly. People in power without education, ignorant of what the needs are of the people. They've never been in a lot of these situations, so they don't have, and they're all about trying to impress their peers, which means that they're all trying to outdo the other. You know, years ago, I did some work for these wealthy people, and they lived in an area where the houses were elite and they were big. And one of the houses in the area had caught on fire. And when the owners rebuilt it, they wanted their house to be bigger than even the ones that I worked for. They wanted their houses to be huge. And it was so huge, it was towering over other houses in this elite area. And it looked so ridiculous. But the person that owned the house that rebuilt it, I guess they felt good because they were impressing their peers. It was sad that people are that insecure that they want something, they want to outdo the other person or people so that they look good. And and all they're doing is making things look worse.
Well, we can do something, Miss Leona.
Well, I hope so. I really do. I hope that people will get involved.
They are getting involved. I told you, every day somebody's coming onto the campaign. And what I love about it is when I look at the story of Yeshua, we know as Christ, when he came out, when he started walking, he grabbed one here, one there, one there. And that's the same position we hold, even though we're a lot stronger around the states, specifically around our freedoms. A lot of organizations, we're beginning to bring on their whole organizations that's representing us. And like I said, it's going to come where it won't be able to, it's not going to be able to be stopped.
Have you had people saying anything to you about how they feel or if they are in support of you? And you know, there's a lot of people that will look at the situation and say, well, I don't think he's going to make it, or I don't think he's good, I don't think he'll do well, I don't think this and I don't think that. What are your words to them?
Nothing, because that's their right to have an opinion. You know, for me, it's personal in the sense that I have a whole Bible full of people that they said they weren't going to make it. David, you're not going to be able to slay down Goliath. And he did. So I can't be concerned with that. But to that very point, we're pushing a people campaign with the people have the power, and it's not based on the election. It's based on us knowing our rights and what to do when the government, corporate, or religious institution infringes upon those rights and how to get a remedy. That's the difference. Because too often I think we think we need to be elected to make the difference, and I'm saying no, that's not how it goes. We should already be representing in our community, and the community, the people should say, you are fit for this. And that's what I've heard several times. Andy, from years ago, you would make a great politician, because they confused the charismatic sincerity of me as being a political ploy. And I've ran from that for years. And it wasn't until 2019 when I really looked at that lineup, and I felt no one could represent my interests better than me. So that's why I ran in. And even coming to this time, I was against it because I'm looking at this corporation, United States of America, that is no longer the Constitutional Republic. And I said, I don't want to be a part of that. But then I remember something I heard from this brother Bone out of California. He used to be a former blood, although he, from his documentary, he says he's just not active. He said you got to change from the inside out. So I feel with the experience that I've had up until now, We have a strong following. Our generation truly outnumbers that Biden Trump generation, because it's the truth. I'm 51 years old. That generation is fading away. You see Mitch McConnell, I'm not sure what's going on with him, but he ain't looking healthy. So that generation, we see Brother John Lewis's transition and some of the rest of the elders. So now it's like a new generation coming in that can reach and relate to us and our children. It's kind of like the children of Israel. When they had to enter the promised land, it was a certain generation that didn't make it. That's where I'm at. And that generation, I'm not saying a physical wipeout of the generation. I'm saying a wipeout of that mindset. It's not going to make it to the promised land.
Hmm. I'd like to bring in Dr. Kimberly Mkhitaryan again. Kimberly, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you clearly.
Okay. We had a problem hearing you before, and I don't know if you could hear us, but I had to let you go so you could come back in again. But I don't know if you knew that I was doing that, but thank you so much for coming back in again. I'd like to introduce to the audience as well Dr. Kimberly Mkhitaryan, and she is the founder of Save Our Sons, but she's also very active in a lot of other areas. And Kimberly, if you can, just tell the audience a little bit about yourself and what you have been doing and how you plan to assist or work with Andy as well and other advocates that are trying to make a positive change in the country.
Well, thank you so much, Leona and Andy, for your camaraderie in this fight. I count it an honor to stand with you shoulder to shoulder. I believe this is a specific time in history that certain changes must be made. And in such a way that we don't go backwards to the vomit that has been spewed by this country. My name is Dr. Kimberly Mkhitaryan. I am the president of Save Our Sons and the executive director of Raleigh Police Accountability Community Task Force. I'm also the CEO of an advocacy group, well, more like a lobbying group, entitled SOS Consulting Firm. And our initiative is to let my people go, is to free people. Free them from every form of bondage, just not the prison behind the four walls, but also from our minds, because most people don't understand that really it's not the bars that lock our people up, it's the mindset. And the mindset of this country that hates its own humanity. So our goal, of course, is to stand with people such as yourself, and those who are, you know, tired of the same old, and get change no matter what. We do that through policy, through advocacy, mentoring, disciple training, and exposing. Our campaigns also, we come against the corruption of these systems, and we sometimes have to go a little deeper than what's on the surface, because these things have been around for centuries. And we believe in doing the nitty-gritty hard work.
Very, very good. Andy, you started to say something when she mentioned, can you kind of like expand on what you were thinking about?
Oh, it's just my let my people go. That we've got a kindred spirit in that movement.
Yes.
Kimberly and I talked, so it's perfect alignment. And
yes,
I love the fact that when she shares, it's the mental, physical, and spiritual bondage. And that's what makes this movement different, because there's no morality when these legislators are passing these legislative rules. It's just about a vengeance is mine. So when we talk about setting the captives free, let my people go spiritually, physically, and mentally, that's all across the board, because the individual sitting up there that thinks they're a judge that has the right to rule, they're in bondage, they're in captivity. To the officer that has carried on that spirit of the slave patrol and the slave catchers, they're in a bondage. So we have to come with that agape love, that love that is given to those who once were lost and now they're found, that have been embraced by a spiritual father that has taught us how to love ourselves. We get to come in to the enemy's camp and take back what he stole. And that's why I laughed in a loving way and an honoring way that God has been so gracious to align Kimberly and us together in the natural. So it's just a beautiful thing. That's what it was.
Amen. Same here, my brother.
Yes.
So some of the questions that people will probably be asking as well is, what will you be doing for the citizens in the communities, the people in the communities of the cities and in the states?
So I don't really feel there's nothing that I could ever do for anybody. And I take that from the scripture when the man was at the well talking to Christ, saying, every time the water rises up, nobody's there to throw me in. And he said, well, pick up your bed and walk. That doesn't mean that we don't provide the choice before the people. So currently with our communities, what we need to do is have a healing campaign, that the communities need to be healed. Because we have seen so much trauma, violence, been victims of hate, outside inflicted, self-inflicted, that what we need is, as a people, to heal. Because that is what I feel is the biggest burden, that's the biggest, one of the biggest, I would say, is we've not healed as a people. We're constantly watching trauma unfold every single day.
Yes.
This is inhumane to live into a society that sees people get murdered. The stuff, again, we could talk about Palestine and Israel, and we could go to Georgia, Virginia, Illinois, exactly. Chicago.
Exactly. One of the things is, we know what the problems are, and we know what needs to be done, but what I'd like to know is, how would you go about doing some of these things? And there are people who are disabled. There are people who are being attacked because of their race or their gender or their religion. And I know we, the people, are going to hopefully work together, but at the same time, they are going to want to know, this person that they are going to be voting for, what is he actually going to be doing to resolve a lot of these issues? And I'd like to know what your thoughts or your answer would be to these people that are asking these kind of questions.
The solution to the problems already exist. What is happening is that some of the people are spiritually blind and spiritually deaf, so the solution is right in front of them. They can't see it. There are churches all across these states. Mm-hmm. And I say that because the churches are closed Monday through Friday. So when I talk about this healing centers I'm talking about, I'm not asking you what your religion is. I'm not asking you what your belief is. I'm saying the doors are now open for those that need the healing. Come on in. You want to learn an education system that is aligning with what you believe. Well, here's these buildings that are closed Monday through Friday that have now opened. It don't take no money for that. Yeah. It doesn't take that money for that. Every state's got an ACLU chapter. Every state's got an NAACP chapter. Every state has, I don't want to deal with the Social Security Administration, but for instance, they got these government entities that there are people in there that have a heart. They really are. So I'm not trying to say that the current government system is all bad. What I'm saying is, when we come together as the people, it says 2 Chronicles 7:14, if my people, so if the people, the same if my people, and we are the people that's written in the Declaration of Independence, come together, you won't see none of these things that's going on, other than that little tiny minute group of people that refuse to change because the Creator has hardened their hearts, no different than he did for Pharaoh, Nebuchadnezzar, or any one of those other people, that if you really see the story, God hardened their hearts because the people were stubborn.
Okay, I'd like to ask now, as president, you do get budgets, you do get a large portion of money to distribute to all the projects that you would be doing as president that you would be approving, how would you a lot of people in government now disproportionately use up these funds, but how would you divide the funds according to the issues that are going on in the country, according to the people in need, the elderly, the juveniles, how would you proportionately distribute those funds to those different areas of need in the United States? Because, of course, we want to see everybody go to church. We want to see them go to worship their creator and pray and try to change. We also have a lot of people in churches, religious leaders, that are part of the problem because they're misleading the people. So that is definitely an area of need, to go into the churches that are being truthful. And we have religious leaders that I always say, if they're really religious leaders, they're going to try to bring other religions together, sit down at the table and do some real research into the Bible, and then come to a conclusion of the similarities and the differences that they see. And these like the Democrat, just like our political parties, we have a lot of these religious leaders that are also talking about other religions that they've never been involved in, and they don't know anything about it. So, as I say, this has to come first from these religious leaders who go to schools of theology only to be taught by man. So it's a matter of really dissecting the Bible and doing some extensive research. But in the meantime, getting back to the funds that would be distributed to all people in need in the communities, the school system, the courts, the prison system, you know, the rehabilitation center, the homeless shelters, how would you proportionately distribute these, and what areas would you find more of a need to distribute these funds?
So currently we have states that are some of the poorest states and cities in the nation. And there are type of marginalized communities that don't have, you know, resources. Those are where we would go first, because even under the Dr. King, his leadership, as well as the scriptures, for me, what you do unto the least of these, you've done unto me also. So the widows, the fatherless, the orphans, these are where we're at. And that's nothing to do with a religious. It's got something to do with a moral situation. That's what we would do. Because that's what you need to do regardless if you elected or not. And when we see the model, you look at what Jimmy Carter has been doing from his presidential, going around to other countries with this peace movement. So we done had enough war. We need about 8 to 12 years to see what peace looks like, because we've never experienced that as a people. We've not experienced that. So when we're distributing the money and the resources, it's going to these impoverished areas so we can get that foot off their neck. Because I know with Dr. King, we don't always hear this speech about him, but he talks about the foot being on the people's neck, you know, or they don't have no boots to even pick up by the bootstrap because we don't even have no boots. But that's reality for so many areas, and we're overlooking that. But when I say going to these areas, it's not just giving some money. That's where we come back with the educational system. We're teaching them a vocational skill. Here's how you farm. Here's how you create this solar energy. Here's how you eat off the land. Because too many times we're talking about reparations. No, we want restitution. Give us the land back. So when we would have the land in our communities, and now we get rid of these food deserts, because now we're cultivating our own food. We're not worrying about this pesticides and all this stuff. And now you see people living healthy. When we take these, the green collar jobs that Van Jones wrote the book on, how we would create jobs again in America. Well, my job as the president is to remove the red tape. Because I can't tell you to be a social entrepreneur, but then you got to jump through all these hoops, licenses, and all this other stuff. What is the purpose to do that? That's what we have to do. We have to use the natural resources that nature's God has given us, and use the stalks of these hemp plants that everybody's so running out with the CBD and legalized cannabis. We'll use the hemp plants, because those hemp plants can create housing. Those hemp plants can create steel, clothes, paper, so much fuel, so much soap, all these things that can be done, and that comes from this communities that don't have the resources. You put these type of energy efficient and these vocational training and teach these trades, now you become to balance it out with the people. Because again, I am of the mindset that we have everything we need. Jeff Bezos a couple years ago gave Van Jones $100 million. Do you know what would happen if I just had $10 million right now?
We can do it. Well, what you're saying then basically is that you'd be funding vocational schools and the educational part. You would be distributing more funding for the educational part, for vocational and green and all that, right? Okay, we have a caller 111. Do you have something you'd like to say or would like to state your name, please? You know, I guess they're just listening. So that would be one area that you would be funding and promoting to be able to teach these people their how to farm and how to do vocational work, building houses and working on cars and things like that they did at one time. I don't know if they still do it. But a lot of these vocational schools in place, they were building one house a year in some states, in some towns, and they were working on automobiles. People actually that couldn't afford to have it done, they would do it. They would pay, the people would pay for the material, but the labor was free. And so this is pretty much what you're talking about, is the vocational training and agriculture and other things like that.
Most definitely, because we know the saying, if you teach a man how to fish, he can take care of his own. Mm-hmm. We can't keep being dependent on the government, because that makes us corporate slaves. What our goal is to empower people to have some dignity and pride in what we're doing. That's one of those things we've lacked with our morality. Because if you always have somebody giving you something, then you're always going to be dependent. And if you're always dependent, he who gives can take away. And we're not in that position no more. We're at a position now that we need to be off that milk and we need to eat to meat. And I believe it's enough of us.
I'd like to ask a question. A lot of people in this country, they're furious because they say all these immigrants coming in and all these people on welfare getting all these benefits for free. And I always say, you know, they don't have to. These people, I'm sure, if they gave them housing and they gave them food and the tools to work with, they could have them going out into the communities and actually doing some volunteer work. They could have them cleaning up the streets. You know, they could have them doing washing, you know, helping to wash the windows in the homeless shelters to help out in those areas. We have a government that doesn't even think of these things. And we have a society that does a lot of complaining about those people that are having all these benefits for nothing. One of the things is, I will say, the United States is built on immigrants. That's how the United States is built, where all our ancestors or somebody all came from other countries. So when they talk about these illegal immigrants, they shouldn't be judging, because that's what made the United States. But if they feel that these people are getting benefits, you know, for doing nothing, the government could put something together to actually have these people do volunteer work wherever it may be. And what are your thoughts on that?
So one of the things that I think is this, Ms. Leona, we have all these projects built, these neighborhoods with projects. They're paid for. So what we start doing is taking those out, because when under the Clinton administration, they had the welfare to work program. I don't know what happened with that, but it don't really appear that there was any accountability for that. So now you have people that's been on Section 8 of welfare for 20, 30, 40 years. My position is you take them off. You don't take them off. Let me say this, that those are the ones that you start educating about financial, you know, literacy, the trauma, the healing, provide these services, and then they move into these houses now that we're building these houses. Those that are the foreigners take their place. But then that cycle is set up there now that you're not just coming in here to stay here. You're coming here to come through. You're passing through, because what it was intended to do, we're actually doing it now. That's the point. Because what happens is you bring a foreigner in, and then you give them this aid while you're overlooking this brother that's been homeless sitting on the streets, or family that's homeless sleeping in their cars. You're bypassing them because they don't have this, this, this. So the perception is you think you're doing something right, but you're really overlooking it's a better way to do it. And the way to do it would be take care of your own first. If you're not providing for your own household, if you're not providing for your own, how do you go take care of the neighbor?
How would you deal with the homeless situation, the homeless shelters?
The homeless shelters that are in existence right now?
Yes. What improvements could you make or would you want to see made in the homeless shelters?
I haven't been in enough of the homeless shelters to state what is working and what's not. I know there's probably some...
One of the things is, I get furious when I think about it. These homeless shelters around the country, they're getting all kinds of funding to put a roof over these people's head from 5 o'clock in the afternoon until 7 o'clock in the morning. Then they put them back out in the streets, and these people have all day long, most of them mentally ill or addicted, have all day long to do nothing but probably find a way to get a drink or drugs. And so that when they go back to the homeless shelter at 5 o'clock, a lot of times they don't get in because they've been using. So how would you do something? I mean, I feel as though these homeless shelters are getting all this funding to house people at nighttime, but they're not doing anything with them from 7 o'clock in the morning until 5 in the afternoon. What are your thoughts on bringing professionals in or retired volunteers, retired substance abuse counselors or retired mental health providers or even occupational therapists to come in and work with them on possibly helping them with resumes or helping them seek employment, bringing them some information, you know, trying to work with them to better themselves? Don't you think that all this money that are being funded, given to the homeless shelters, is a waste of time and money when they're not doing anything but putting a roof over their head at nighttime?
So like I said, Ms. Leona, I don't want to speak to that because I don't know that to be a fact. What I do know for a fact is that if we are the people and then we are able to come together as a community and provide, like I said, with the churches, you're closed Monday through Friday. So when these individuals, these families, or these people are in these shelters, and if they're going out during the day, well, part of you to be able to be part of this community, the shelter, is that you're actually taking an initiative to try to better yourself. Now, we know that not everybody's going to have that drive because it takes some time. So I'm not going to put a burden on people that have generational trauma going on, but that's what Christ said when you would walk with a brother, because that's our program, walk with a brother, walk with a sister. So you got to walk with the people and lead them. And then, of course, there's some accountability because there's only so much you can do before you have to let somebody go. You got to cut the umbilical cord and then need them to come back. So I don't believe it's just on the housing centers and what they're doing. It's a community approach, which is why we're saying we are the people. We are the people, and if my people, we can come together. And we've seen this nation come together from the 2020 social unrest and George Floyd. So we don't have a problem coming together. What we have a problem doing is what to do after we've came together. Now we're all here with no direction, no nothing. And I believe Father Greg Boyle out of California, Homeboy Industries, one of the biggest reentry gang deactivation places in the world, for that matter, what I've heard. Delancey Street out of New York. There's models that exist currently today that are sustainable, that are working. We need to duplicate those models. We need to duplicate those blueprints. In the Department of Corrections of Michigan, they have a prison build program. They call it Vocational Village. They call the people down there villagers. We need to duplicate that program because their recidivism rate has dropped because now you're teaching a skill. Those people were building homes with Habitat for Humanity. So now you just created some sustainable and affordable housing. That's what we do as we come together. We're saying if you're doing this, maybe you don't know how to balance your budget. Maybe you don't know how to spend the stuff wisely because you come from an impoverished poverty mindset and you didn't learn financial. But now you're the director of this shelter. Well, you're still going to make the same mistakes because there's no accountability there. So what we do as a people we come in and uplift each one, the least of these, and we walk with them and we teach. And that way we start showing that communities are working. And it makes, to me, the most sense to go in these very impoverished cities. I want to say it was in Alabama. I seen a county. They live off of $300 a week. $300 a week. We can come down there and we can offer something there without raising the prices. Now that we done revitalized the community, you don't raise the prices down there. You modernize some stuff, make things accessible. Things like that, that we the people have the power to do.
One of the things that I see right in Brockton, Massachusetts, they have huge, huge building. It's dilapidated. It makes the city look terrible. And I'm sure there are other dilapidated buildings in other cities in New York and elsewhere. And I often wonder, you mentioned vocational training. What are your thoughts on having these students, the teachers bring these students together and go into the cities and actually identify facilities or buildings that can be, with the tools and the funding, that can be renovated and or even rebuilt and to make the cities look good, but also to open those buildings up so that they can start housing people who are homeless or who are seeking some kind of transitional homes or even permanent homes. What are your thoughts on those things? Because these are major issues. I know in Brockton there was a church right across the street from a homeless shelter. And you'd see all these people sitting on the sidewalk. And across from that church next to the homeless shelter, the same pastor or bishop or whatever she called herself had another church. So you had one church across the street from another, and you had a homeless shelter next to it, and you had all these people sitting on sidewalks, homeless people. And one of those churches was not even being used. What are your thoughts on, I know we talk about all these things coming together in the churches and everything, but sometimes it takes a little bit more than just, going to church and doing these things. When you have something like this, this is an opportunity for a bishop to say, well, we're not using this other church. Why don't we open this up and have it, just do something. But I see all these buildings in the cities all over the place, and they're just sitting there making the cities look bad. And then you have all these in the cities, you have all these bottles, and they actually talked about in Massachusetts, they were finding used needles not far from a school. So what are we going to do in a case like this? What would you plan to do? And you wouldn't be doing all this. I'm sure you'd like everybody, every other president, would have people working under you in different departments. How would you work with all of these people in doing some of these things out in the communities? Again, we know what the problems are. We can talk about what needs to be done. But I'm trying to get some kind of an idea on exactly where you would be in these different situations.
So the beautiful thing about being in the position of a president, you have a cabinet and there's departments, and each one of those departments are responsible for this. So it's not one man or one individual saying, I'm going to do this, because that's unreasonable. That's not even realistic. However, what is realistic is to ensure that the blueprint is in each one of these cities or these states. So if we have, since we brought it up, a church that has a vacant building and then they're not paying taxes on that building, then you don't need to have that building. And if it's just sitting there and there's a need in the community. So what we can do as a government is buy the building. And if you're saying you're a church and you're providing social services, but you're not, then turn you into a corporation and get rid of your get rid of your ability to not to pay taxes, because then that's going to require people to shape up. You know what I'm saying? Like, as you got to mold people into the right position. And as I've stated before, which will be coming out in our Restore America blueprint, the solution to every problem already exists. It really does. A lot of people have great ideas. They don't know how to implement them. We don't. And then those who know how to implement them, they lack the resources, which goes back to what you were saying earlier. How would you plan to distribute it? I would go into those that need it the most. Because under the Trump administration, he passed legislation called Opportunity Zones. Those Opportunity Zones allowed the rich people to put those who wanted to get a tax deferment to invest into these target areas. They don't even have to go. They can just invest in them. But when they see that it works, like, again, Jeff Bezos giving $100 million, you hear what Van Jones is saying. He's saying we're going to invest this into infrastructure to disrupt the prison industrial complex. Well, but that's who I'd be kicking it with, you know, which I've already wrote their organization a letter about this. To do it now, though, is the point, too. We're not trying to wait till Andy becomes the president, because that is what I feel has hindered us as a people. Everybody comes out with this beautiful promise of what they're going to do if they get elected. Then they don't get elected, and then your promises fall short. Prime example, Pete Buttigieg, he had this Frederick Douglass plan. Well, he didn't get elected, so what happened to your Frederick Douglass plan? We have Michael Bloomberg, who I do respect because he's a very his social entrepreneur skills that he has brought in. He said, I'm going to do all this getting elected, which he has the experience. He is the one that really has experience doing this. Well, he didn't get elected, and I'm not sure if he did invest it in the community when he was talking about resurrecting Tulsa, Oklahoma, the Black Wall Street. So when we coming in, teaching each one, hey, to the rich, this is what you can offer, and this is why it's going to benefit you. To the disenfranchised, here's what we're going to offer you, and this is how it's going to work for you. But we're not just going to give you the stuff until you figure it out on your own. That's what the discipleship said, as Sister Kimberly said others, which we called it the leader. And lead means leadership, entrepreneurship, apprenticeship, discipleship, and mentorship. That's what our leader is. So we can do this.
And Dr. Mkhitaryan, were you going to say something? I'd like to hear what you have to say with this. I guess she can't hear me. One of the things I'd like to ask you, Mr. Williams, tell me, as far as defunding, what are your thoughts on defunding law enforcement and defunding the Department of Corrections around the country?
So I really believe it's reallocation of funds. we are the defund the police movement is what I take from it is saying it's always been about reactory policing. There's no investment into prevention. So when we're saying defund the police or to that concept, I'm talking about reallocating funds. So in the city of Aurora, my home city, the police budget is $77 million. That's what the police budget is. $200,000 is allocated to the seniors, and $200,000 is allocated to the youth. That's $400,000. That's it. Then you got $1 million that's allocated to the animal shelter. Where is anything that deals with the vocational schools and stuff that I was sharing with you, the trauma, which we call them healing centers? None of that exists because the current government system looks at individuals and say, oh, just lock them up. So what the sheriff, Ron Hain of Kane County, did is he turned his jail into a restorative justice institution that he started dealing with the opioid epidemic, the fatherless epidemic, the trauma. Like, he started dealing with it, getting to the root of it. So then that's what we would do with the defunding of the police and defunding of the correctional facilities.
Now, you just mentioned this particular sheriff that has these programs going, and this is why I ask about defunding, because I believe myself, and you can tell me what your thoughts are or if you were president, how you would handle it, but I believe that they should be defunded unless they showed transparency in the interaction that they have with the people in the communities and also with the people incarcerated. Unless they show some transparency, unless you see the interaction going between the incarcerated and the COs and the prison officials, and you see a better environment between law enforcement and the people in the communities, I think that the funding is, and I think it's a number one priority so that we can start seeing some interaction, proper interaction, and give according to what they give them initiatives for the good that they do. Now, I also know that recently they're starting now to put body cams on the people in the prison, but yet they're talking about paying these people extra money for wearing these body cams. And the entire purpose for them to wear the body cams is to so that there's transparency, so that people are going to be seen if they try to abuse or violate. So that's why I ask what your thoughts are on defunding and offering initiatives as we see progress in the prisons and in the communities, as we see more positive interaction going on. So what are your thoughts on defunding in that, in those areas?
So when it comes to correctional facilities, they're modern-day plantations. A lot of them need to be shut down, period. What I don't want to do is to not have any form of having people in a reformatory situation or a correctional facility that's a harm to themselves and society. One of the things that we'll be able to reduce the prison industrial complex is by getting rid of the fake drug war. So once we get rid of the drug war, the Controlled Substance Act, these things, then you're going to automatically reduce the prison population by 60%. The Brennan Institute, the Brennan Center wrote, have done the research on it. So has the Vera Institute for Justice. These are the people that I've read their reports and stuff. And as the appropriate time comes, we start implementing those. They've already wrote the reports on what to do. Once we get rid of these victimless crimes, primarily those who are locked up for these minor probation, parole, nobody was hurt. You just used some rules to lock somebody up so you can continue to profit, which is modern-day slavery. Once we get rid of that, and then we take the money that was being used to house these individuals on these plantations, we invest that into the communities where we already know they're saying the high crime areas, which they're just high target areas. You're going to see a whole different reduction. You're going to see people living well, being whole, respecting their community, because the prices of stuff that are so high, you have income in the home, because now we're also eating from the farmers, you know, the vegetables and stuff that we're growing in our community, opening up butcher shops again, having our own meat instead of this fake meat they're creating. And that's how we go back to a way of a village, which is, again, what we call our Restore America, that deals with the holistic approach to everything. So it's easy to, quote unquote, stop investing into prisons, because that money won't be locking people up for these drugs. Specifically, I want to share this. I think it was 11 states. I don't know how many it was, but I know Illinois, California, Texas, some other states. They sued Walgreens, CVS, and a couple other drug companies for their role in the opioid epidemic, which my younger brother committed suicide. Well, he had an opioid overdose. He did it deliberately, okay? So when they sued these corporations, they got fined. These corporations, people hide behind these corporations, so the corporation didn't do it. People did it. But they fined them, though. That's what I'm saying. When it comes to the marginalized communities or the people that are being charged under the Controlled Substance Act, those are not civil charges. Those are criminal, and they get locked up. So now that becomes a violation of equal protection, selective prosecution. You choose to lock up these in this target area for destroying the community, but when it comes to this opioid epidemic, which is the pharmaceuticals that's making billions of dollars, you just slap them with a fine and then try to regulate their behavior, which they can just repackage up the drug, put a different name on it, has the same effect, because it's the addictiveness in those drugs that got people hooked in the first place. So once we get rid of that, now we've seen, once we get rid of those that have been locked up for marijuana that you just done legalized, but it's been destroyed whole communities under this fake drug war. Come on.
I wanted to ask real quickly about the drug testing. You mentioned all of this, but what are your thoughts on, and I think it should be, but we have people that periodically or randomly drug tested in places of employment and other places. And What are your thoughts on having law enforcement and also prison of employees tested for drugs and evaluated as well periodically, randomly?
If you're working for the government,
yes,
then
any government worker,
yes. However, I want to know what is the purpose of the drug testing, though, because I believe that people have rights. And whatever you do outside of your job is your personal business. I have no business invading your privacy. But if you come to work and you're under the influence, now that's something that has to be dealt with, because now you're putting the people at work at risk of that. But to go home and smoke a joint, do some, that's your business. We ain't got nothing to do with
that. What I'm saying is, and you go on the, you can go on the internet and type in guards caught smuggling drugs into the prisons. So the drugs are getting into the prisons, and they always talk about families and friends bringing it in. But it's obvious when you go on the internet, it's all over the internet, that guards are bringing in the substances and drugs as well. So my question is, because of this, why? What are your thoughts about them being tested for drugs and even in a psychological evaluation? We have an epidemic in this country of mental illnesses and addictions. We have mental institutions that have all been shut down across the country, and people being thrown into prison rather than being thrown into long-term residential treatment facilities. I believe that there should be established. They should establish, and I don't know if you as a president would be recommending it or people on the outside, but I believe that long-term residential treatment facilities, both mental health and also addictions, should be established around the country. There should be oversight, and they should be taking in these people who are being alternatively thrown into prison rather than going into regular treatment facilities. We also have in the prisons unexperienced, unlicensed providers that are contracted with the Department of Corrections around the country. And these people that are contracted, WellPath is an example, and they serve 36 or 37 states, and their founder is either in prison now or will be because of they had him in court because of all these years of corruption and fraud and everything else. But what I'm saying is to reduce the prisons, reduce mass incarceration, I believe that long-term residential treatment facilities need to be put in place, mental health and substances, anger management, and they should be taken out of the prisons and put in these treatment facilities where they're going to get proper treatment. Wrongfully convicted, that's what we have, wrongfully convicted, we have first-time offenders, and we actually have victims who became offenders. So these are some of the things that I was interested in your opinion on, is these long-term residential treatment facilities and also drug testing, not only for the law enforcement, not only for the prison employees, but also government in general. Because right now they're legalizing marijuana, and why would they legalize it if either they or their children were not using? And then those people who have been in prison all these years for doing the same thing are still sitting in prison. So how do we rectify all of this and bring all this together so that it makes sense? And I always say independent investigations or independent oversight in the prisons, in the law enforcement, in the schools, everywhere you look, I think independent overseers should be put in place, because we have no independent overseers anywhere, even in a lot of these nonprofit organizations. Taking all this money to do all these so-called advocacy or legal or whatever it might be, there's no oversight.
Which is why we the people have to run for office and not just one individual. It's just not. It's no way one individual could fix this. We'd have to do it together. But when we come to this drug testing and all that, the prisons are already going to be reduced by 60%, because those states that are lawfully. So let me back up. The DOJ was created to protect the rights of the Negroes and their descendants, the newly freed Negroes and their descendants. So if this is the power that the DOJ has, the president as the chief magistrate can use the DOJ to bring claims against these states for infringing upon the people's rights. And part of that is each state getting money under these Title VII whatever funds. I think it's Title VII. I know it came out under the Kennedy administration. But whenever the government is giving funds to the states and these states are discriminating, they lose those funds. They lose those funds. So what I would be able to do with the DOJ and our Civil Rights Department is to go into these states, file a claim against them, and get rid of those funds. And so what those funds, again, that were being sent to them to infringe upon the people's rights, we would use those funds to bring forth these healing, these trauma centers, these vocational schools, these educational positions that are non-traditional. You know, there's a school in Arizona that they go to school for 3 hours a day, like 3 hour shifts, but it's strictly vocational for the high school. I think it's Rose something. It already exists, so we could take that model across the other states. That's going to deal with that drugs and stuff being smuggled into prison. And those who are actually addicts, well, there's a Supreme Court opinion, Robinson versus California, that says you can't punish somebody based on their status. So if I'm an addict, you can't lock me up for that. I get to go to the Betty Ford Center or the Afeni Shakur Center, because she was once strung out on drugs and got her life together. So we would do an Afeni Shakur Center just like they got the Betty Ford Center. And that's what we the people can do. That's what we can do. And we don't need government to do that. We don't need an election to do that. We just need to know how to do that and then do it. And that's where we're at with that.
Okay, does anybody have any questions?
I don't have a question. Can you hear me, you all?
Uh-huh.
Let me say I am full. I'm overstuffed with such delight to hear real solutions, because I think America has been so driven by capitalism that they've done more to create the problem than solve the problem. And what I hear our candidates say for the people is there is already a solution. We just have to take out the corruption that keeps it going. Because you can't exploit the problem to keep it going.
Correct.
If you want to solve it, you can't exploit it at the same time. And that is what America has been like, almost given the rights to dismantle and put back together and break it down again. That is actually called RICO, where you begin to racketeer your own problem so you can make money. And that is what the prison industrial complex is. That is what any of the major wars that we see fought across across the globe, we've just seen them basically do something and then come back and make money. So it is imperative that we also remember to dismantle big businesses out of the issues of what we call people ticks, which should drive the well-being of people and not deep pockets. And this is where I really like to what I hear. This is a long time coming, and I believe this is what the Creator has installed humanity. If we're going to say this work for each and every fellow on the planet.
Thank you, Dr. I want to say real quickly, we have about 10 minutes left. I know I've gone over time with you, Andy, but I just want to say one thing. The I feel like we have to identify the problems that go on in this country first of all. I think that It's the training needs to be done. It seems like training is always the resolution. We need to train these people. We need to, and I don't think it's training so much as it is working from the heart and knowing, identifying the problems and working in unity to resolve it. But as the president has the power to do everything. We can open nonprofit organizations. We can do all these things. But the issues are there's no oversight. And this is where people in leadership, government leaders, need to focus on the problems. They need to focus on the issues. You have homeless shelters you're putting all this money into. It's a waste of money unless you're doing something during the day with these individuals rather than putting them back on the street only to get back into drinking or drugging or whatever the case may be. Okay? We have prisons who don't seem to be allowing all incarcerated to enter to participate in programs. So yet when there are improvements made, when there's criminal justice reform and people have an opportunity to go before the board or go before the governor for a pardon or for an early release, they don't have anything to show for it. Because some prisoners are targeted and they're prevented from taking any kind of work or educational programs, first of all, because the prison officials are doing it purposely, so they have nothing to show, so they won't have an opportunity to be released. We have people in the streets that need to be in shelters, and they go into shelters at nighttime, and they come out in the morning, and they're right back to square one. A lot of them don't get to go back into the homeless shelters because they started drinking again. We have an epidemic in this country of mental illnesses and addictions, but yet everybody's being thrown into prisons with inexperienced, uneducated, unlicensed, very abusive guards and prison officials, and these people are not getting treatment. They're going in bad, and they're getting worse while they're inside. We have a serious issue of suicides in this country, in the penal system, and in the communities. We have a history of drugs with things all over the streets. We have no more role models for these children because everybody is so busy looking at themselves and looking out for their peers and looking out for them and taking sides and going to other countries and getting involved. We have a major issue here. We have a president right now that's using all the money from this country to go to all these other countries when there are serious issues, high prices in groceries, people without jobs, people in the streets, people having psychological problems, mental health, people having addictions, all kinds of needles and everything being found in the streets. Now we have, because of two governors in Florida and Texas, we have prisoners that were lured into this country. Then we have people at the border that are trying to come into this country. And unfortunately, they're not getting help. They're getting killed or they're getting turned away. They're trying to flee from some kind of violence in their country, coming to this country, which is supposed to be a land of blessings, and they're getting treated worse. There's got to be a solution. And I say, put them to work. Give them volunteer work to do, wherever they may be. And get people in these homeless shelters where they can actually do some training and help these people with resumes, help them with getting themselves their hygiene clean, helping them get transitional housing or counseling instead of just putting a roof over their head at night. There are a lot of issues in the United States of America.
Hey, Ms. Leona.
People are cold in this country. These are some of the issues that I wanted to see addressed, and you did address many of them, Andy, and I thank you for that.
Yeah, the show that went over, Miss Leona, I've got a rotary that I got to be at 6:30. Woo-hoo.
Well, you're late because we have 5 minutes of seven right now, but I thank you for coming on. I thank you also, Dr. Mkhitaryan, and Mr. Williams will be on again next Tuesday at 5:30 p.m. I thank you for coming on. I thank the listener for listening in, and I thank the audience for listening in. And again, okay. if you have any suggestions, if you have any questions, feedback, in order to have perfection in this country or at least stability, please join us. Please give ideas. Talk about some of the issues you want to see presidential candidates discuss. Please do call in because, again, okay. It's going to be resolved if we don't talk about it.
And my website is Andy, www.awj2024.com. awj2024.com. All right. Thank y'all.
Okay. And Dr. Mkhitaryan, you want to give your website again, too?
Yes. Our website is saveoursonsus.org. saveoursonsus.com.
Saveoursonsus.com. Okay, I want to thank you so much for coming on as well, Dr. Mkhitaryan, and I'm going to let the audience say to everybody, please listen in. I thank you all who are listening because it shows that you're interested in whatever the discussions are. Don't be afraid to call in with criticism. Don't be afraid to call in with feedback or questions, concerns, or anything. This is what Shedding Light is all about, and it's coming together in unity to try to resolve some of the issues in this country. Remember, we're not looking good to other countries with everything going on in this country. We're not looking good, and we know there's no need for us to go to other countries and get involved in their wars when we have a war in our own country that we need to address. So thank you all for listening in. Remain neutral. Keep everyone and one another in prayer, and let's see if we can't see this country coming back to some normality. If not, we might as well say the United States of America is doomed. So thank you all for listening in. And again, listener 111, thank you for listening in as well. We are now going to end this episode.